This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get reward points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Jetson's there, Billy Head, a goal, Chris Billy, Huddersfield Town. The most famous goal of Chris Billy's life.
Is this the moment for Lee Fowler? It is. Take your place in Division 2. Huddersfield.
Oi. Thank you.
Champion Steve Simonson's boots now. He's missed. Steve Simonson clears the frame of the goal and collapses in a heap of tears. Huddersfield Town are promoted.
Christopher Schindler has a chance to write his name in Huddersfield Town legend. And he takes that chance!
Hello and welcome to episode 208 of the Andy Takes That Chance podcast. This week, Town boss Andre Brighton writer said that he wanted a dirty win against Millwall, and the lads replied in kind with a filthy late win to catapult the Terriers above Birmingham and out of the relegation zone. This week, we also wanted a dirty, filthy podcaster to add to our little clique, and here he is, crawling back like Shrek to Donkey. It's a man who got speared in the cowshed on WrestleMania weekend. It's the Orge, Dan Pozzaporrit. You okay, Poz?
I'm very well, mate. How are you?
Where were you? Where were you when we was? Where were you when we were?
He's come crawling back. How are we? Are you all right, mate? Been a while.
Yeah, I'm good, mate. It has, mate. Yes, it's nice to be back. I know it's coincided with a win, but obviously it wasn't planned for that. So.
Okay, as well as the Ginger Ogre, we've also got Cozzy the Animal Steel and the Val Venus of the podcast. It's Ian Kilroy. Are we all right, boys?
Yeah, we're good.
We're still buzzing. Splendid.
Right, okay. This episode, as always, is sponsored by the wonderful Magic Rock Brewing. Use our code of AHTTC10 for all online orders where you'll get 10% off. And if you look at the bottom of the screen, if you're watching on YouTube, you will see that the code is going across your lovely device. Okay, let's crack into it then, eh? Huddersfield Town 1, Millwall 0. Killer, we like to, and Pozza, we like to talk about systems and stuff, don't we? And Town went 4-4-2, which was very much Viagra to every Town fan over the age of 50. Bergzorg up top with Bojan Radulovic, target man striker, two out-and-out wingers, and Ben Jackson at left back. I think he'd set his stall out here quite nice and early, Killer. Town turned around and went with the wind, and we'll talk about the wind in a minute. But it was certainly a sign of intent, really, wasn't it? That, you know, he wanted to go for this game. There was no messing around. Due to Plymouth winning the night before as well, Town had to really pick something up here. And to be fair, the system and the formation kind of alluded to Town, you know, no messing.
Yeah, well, you know, Matt, I'm very outspoken on my preference when it comes to how we set up. I think through people missing out yesterday, like with Hoggy and Radoni in midfield, I don't think we could do much else anyway. I think the kind of the system we had was all we could really put out there. I don't think there's many other options available to us. I just like the fact that he got kind of Brighton right have filled the team yesterday with players that create moments. Like I'm massive fan of Josh Koroma. And even in games as dire as yesterday, there's moments where particular players can just create little things and give you a chance to win the game. Okay, it wasn't Koroma that did get us there in the end, but to me, he set up yesterday exactly as I'd have set up, and we had to win. And it's nice to see Brighton Wright make that change, because we had Rotherham only a couple of weeks ago where we kind of set our stalls out and just were happy with that point where all the fans were on the back wanting to win. Kevin Nagel's in the stadium yesterday, and it just felt like from the off, we were there to win, to have a go at winning the game. And the conditions were awful. And like you say, Matt, we'll get into that in a little bit, because I think a lot of fans didn't really get grasp how much that kind of will have played into how the game played out. But we set ourselves out correctly. And in the end, Matt, it's made the difference. And we've walked away with 3 points that gives us a real chance now to have a successful end to this season.
Poz, you're an old man let's say an old man in a young person's body, aren't you, when it comes to, 4-4-2, get it forward. You must have been cock-a-hoop.
Yeah, I quite like, obviously, I'm pretty old school in that sort of sense, Matt. We've had many discussions about the formations and setups and stuff like that in the past. But yeah, it was nice to see us 4-4-2. It probably wouldn't have been my preferred lineup in a 4-4-2. I would have probably put Bergzog, Weig and Koroma up front. I think Bergzog's better out there. I don't think he really suits playing down middle. I think he needs to be out wide where he's got more of a one-on-one, because he has got that in him to kind of jink past someone and then kind of explode into space, which you don't always get down the middle, just because it tends to be more congested. But it was nice to see us set up and at least on paper look like we were gonna go for it. I don't think there were any other choice, whether that we just had to do that. It would a win at all costs game. As Brighton Wright said before, it doesn't need to be a classical great performance. We just literally need to get a win. And that's what happened. It weren't a great performance by us or Millwall, really. Conditions, as both you and Killer already mentioned, played a big part in that. But we got over the line at the end with a great little poacher's header from Reece Ealy. So that's literally all that
mattered. There's a lot of foreplay to be had before we get into the good stuff. Oh, a little insight.
I'm out of practice, mate.
Aren't we all out of practice when it comes to that? But anyway. Apart from Killer, obviously, with his 7 kids. But we've got first half. Let's talk about the wind, and I don't mean Cozzy on the pod. Cozzy, one flashing moment. So Town started quite well before there was a bit of a lull, and it was Bergzog who's at the heart of it again. And Bergzog had you frothing and foaming at the mouth against Stoke City when he didn't cross it to Healy. On several replays, it's probably not quite as cut and dried as what we thought it was maybe at the time, but again, he had another chance, didn't he, early on, and he's in down the right-hand side channel, and there's an option on the far side. I think it's Koroma.
There were two options there.
Two options, and he's done it again.
He did it again. I'm glad you mentioned that, because it didn't show it on the highlights that we saw, the extended highlights, because he kind of did it again later where he kind of shot across, didn't he, in that as well, and then, was it with Short getting in. I know, unbelievable, mate, but yeah. Like I said, there were people booed his announcement on the team being announced, and people were booing and getting him in back. I don't know why Town fans do that. I get people are getting mad with people. I mean, Matty Pearson and Kilner Banks had a love affair all season and stuff, but it's like, yeah, disappointing. But yeah, did it again, Matt.
To be fair, it was an improved performance from him, wasn't it? Because I don't think we had a go as such last week, but we were a little bit disappointed with his Easter weekend, but it was an improved showing from Bergzog. It was just that moment there, and like Killer mentioned, the game's football's based on moments, and we had a really good one early doors, and we switched ends, didn't we, to go with the wind, and we overhit quite a lot of passes into the channels, and anyone who's played football in wind like that, there's a storm, knows how difficult it is to hit passes, whether you're a team who can pass the ball or not. If you're playing forwards, it is very difficult. But one thing that drove me absolutely mad, and it just made no sense to me whatsoever, was we won quite a lot of corners. And I know Koroma had a chance, which was brilliantly blocked on the line, wasn't it? Where maybe he could have scored. But I like to think of that as a really great block from the Millwall defender. But the corners, Sauber Thomas was causing absolute havoc, wasn't he, from the in-swingers. And then we got several corners on the other side, and we hit. And instead of sort of thinking about things and maybe bringing Ben Jackson across to carry on this in-swinging thing, we're hitting out-swinging corners against the wind and hitting the first man every time. It made absolutely no sense to me. And I think sometimes I know we've got certain ways of playing, we've got certain people for certain jobs, but sometimes it just needs someone to think outside the box a little bit, doesn't it? And it was just that, I was watching it, and there were sort of four corners that just hit. I think Helic might have got his head to one, but there were just four or five there, Poz, where you're just thinking, just do something different here. It's just not, it's not really, you're not playing with your head, really.
Yeah, I think it's one of them, isn't it? I think it were evident. I think it were Rotherham when Sauber Thomas obviously got sent off and we got a corner. Basically, everyone just ran into the box and the ball just sat there for like 30 seconds before somebody realised actually someone needs to go take it. And it were similar to, you know, home game week after when he wasn't playing. It seemed like we didn't really have any other plan than Sauber Thomas takes corner. It's a bit like, you know, junior football when you've got that one guy and that's his job. He takes free kicks, corners, dead balls, everything. And you know, it's a corner, so Sauber Thomas takes it. I sometimes feel sorry for him because he, you know, if you get a corner from left, he takes it. And then if it goes out of the side, he has to leg it across and take it from other side as well. And I think, like you say, sometimes in-game management are good. Even players, really, you don't really need it from your manager. A player should be able to see that, basically, you know, that's not working. Let's try something else. If you've got a left footer on there, whip it in and put it under the keeper's nose. And, you know, we've seen before that, you know, you can quite easily score from a corner in those conditions, especially in that wind. Because that corner flag down that end were the one that were kind of like bending over the most as well. So, it were ridiculously strong. I think Killer said it. You don't realise how strong it is when you're in stands. I walked around pitch afterwards. And when you were down by that police box, it must be a wind tunnel coming in through corners because it were absolutely atrocious. There's no way that, you know, you could play long ball football or even kick it a few feet off at ground. And it were interesting that players were trying it. You'd think, you know, at professional level they'd understand it, but, you know, obviously not.
The one thing it's not just Huddersfield, but I remember their keeper tried to put a top spinner on it and he kicked it and it almost blew back into his own box. And it's like sometimes I think players just forget what's going on, don't they? Cause, but what are we going to say, buddy? And we'll move the conversation.
The one thing that I would really gauge in town before the game, on the Twitter beforehand and stuff, that this was absolute FHITO buff. The confidence in the fan base was absolutely fragile. There were people that were saying we were doomed, this, that and the other. Honestly, there were so many people that couldn't be bothered to drag themselves down there. The bars were quite empty, to be honest. I was surprised how many were there. It felt like a lot had given up. And what, honestly, I don't know if you're going to come up to Millwall's chances. I honestly believe, mate, if one of them, that absolute giant missed that header over the bar, I couldn't believe it, another Femi. If that goes in, I think we're done. I honestly think we're done for the season. I think our confidence is that fragile as a fan base and as a, you know, as a team and the journey that's kind of happened with the injury with Rigoni. I think we were finished and Millwall were kind of bullish early on. Because a lot of me and Med Matt about how they approached the game. I thought they came at us a little bit, mate, and a lot of people said they'd sit in. I thought they came at us early on. I think they were looking for that goal that would kill us off and they had a bit of space and it was so worrying with that because it just felt like I know we wouldn't have been down if we'd have got a draw or a loss, but I think we all know we probably would. And it just felt that we're on a knife edge all the time. So when there were that flashing across the box, if that had gone in early, I think we'd have been done. I've heard people say, no, I won't be here. I'll be after an hour, I'll be back at the pub. I'll see you at half time at the Vulcan and this, that, and the other. Honestly, so many people had kind of given it up, mate. And the negativity was big. And I think obviously we'll come on later on, but that's why one of the reasons I think that Boothie thing came out this week with the, you know, getting everyone up for it because the Stoke game seemed to knock the stuffing out of everyone, mate. And if them two chances had gone well, one had gone in early, I think we were done. Honestly, I think we were.
Let's talk about those chances, Killer, because there's two there. Cozzy's mentioned one, the corner, and from my angle, it looked like the corner was going into the net anyway. And then the guy gets right under the crossbar and heads it over. It's Jake Cooper, isn't it, who manages to do that. And Jake Cooper's actually really good in the air. You know, it was a really good test for Bojan Radulovic as well because Cooper's one of those defenders you kind of want him to come up against because he's going to manhandle him, he's going to push him around. And it's one of those where Bojan's going to have to learn on the job, if you like, in English football because, you know, he's going to get a battering. But he missed that chance. But there was one where a cross came in and two players went for the same ball and they just ended up diving into it, didn't they? And it going wide. And that was the chance there. A little bit of miscommunication, really, from Millwall. And they really should have been one up. And the Martins one would have been a great goal if it had taken it. But it's a good block by Matos, is that? He does really well, does Matos. So, talk us through that chance killer, because I thought that one, and I kind of agree with Cozzy, our confidence is a little bit knife edgy, isn't it? And if that goes in, it's going to be a tough day, isn't it, for us? And but you never know.
We've spoken about it before, Matt. We're mentally fragile, and any kind of adversity we face, we're falling in on ourselves over and over again. Leading into this game, like we spoke about last time, 22 points we dropped from winning positions. So we can't even manage it out, even if we go ahead normally. So never mind if you're a goal behind and chasing your way back into it. But the headers especially, Matt. You see, I do want to go back to the wind a little bit, because I actually played. I had a game yesterday, so I watched the game entirely legally, of course, later on. But I had a game. We started at 1 and finished at 3. And now I don't know if you guys know Huddersfield pitches too well, but we played Cumberworth, and they play up at Bird's Edge on Peniston Road on the left-hand side. It's as windy as it gets. And I was playing right back. They took kickoff. The first ball gets drilled to the top corner to where I am. And it was that windy. The ball was like a knuckleball. It was shifting all over the place. I couldn't track it. And now, positionally, I think I'm still pretty handy and I can head the ball pretty well. Yesterday was tough. Right. We're not professional footballers, but we're not a bad team. We drew with the Gorka in pre-season. Like, we're pretty proficient. We're all right. And everybody on that pitch had an absolute nightmare when it came to controlling the ball, anything in the air. Corners were an absolute nightmare to defend against, because the wind makes it hard for defenders to try and get there. Strikers can gamble. Now, strikers can go to the ball, and if you miss it, you don't really notice it. But if you're a defender and misses it, everybody can kind of see what's happened. And the amount of chances yesterday that came from corners, and the amount of chances that were missed when the ball came in, Matt, like you said, the header, especially from Cooper under the bar, he looked like it was drifting in, and then at last minute it's drifted back out to him. And if you look at him, he's not ready for it. And sometimes I think when you're in the stands, or if you haven't played too much, you just think, that's an awful miss. But the wind has caused that miss. It caused the chance in the first place, but that's what's made him second guess it and put it over the bar. But it's just causing havoc yesterday. And like you say, Matt, playing with the wind behind your back sometimes harder, because when you're attacking with a wind behind you, every ball has to be perfect, because if you overcook it a touch, it's away and the good keeper can come and collect it. It's really, really difficult. So it doesn't always make sense to which half's going to be best, but the John Smith Stadium is awful. I've played on it. Again, not as many as Phil Senior has, who's sometimes on here, but it's really swirly because, like you say, Paul, there's nothing in the corners. It's really, really open. And the wind it swirls around. It doesn't even just go one direction. It's really quite tough to judge where it's going to go. And yesterday, to me, both teams struggled with it all day. Millwall came, I wouldn't say they came to draw, but they came not to lose. They were trying to keep it as tight as possible. I thought they put, and if they walk away yesterday with a 0-0 draw, I think they'd be sitting there thinking, you know what, okay, it wasn't the best performance, but professional job, we've gone there, we've got a point. There's still so many points behind us than they were going into the game, and that's fine. But like you say, if they take any of those three chances, any of them, I think they're all difficult. I think the easiest one they missed was when the two guys kind of miscommunicated and went into it together, and that really should have gone in, and it would have changed the dynamics of the entire game. But with the conditions, it was tough, and it was tough for both teams. But I didn't think Millwall were too bad in that first half. Like you say, I thought they started well. They could have got one ahead, and that changed everything for us. As it went, you could see the demons start to creep into themselves a little bit when they knew they couldn't lose the game, and things were just going against them a bit.
The thing is, Killer, after that, they offered nothing after that. Really weird. It was almost like, you were almost like, realized, right, we've had a go trying to get, because Brighton and I obviously were talking us up. First 25, we were rubbish, and you know, we were good after that. But if I were a Millwall fan, I'd be thinking, well, why have we just...
I think, you know, it's all cause. I think they had nothing to lose. Like, we had nothing to lose, cause we had to win that game. And a draw to us would have been as bad as a defeat, nearly. We had to go and win it. But with Millwall, they had something to defend. And I think when you get to this part of the season and you're at the bottom and someone's chasing you down, that's just naturally what teams tend to do. I don't know why they do it, but if you look over it, that's kind of how it goes. And obviously, they had a bad... They lost to Rotherham, didn't they, earlier in the week? And I think they're just mentally more fragile than even we are. And you could just see it kind of creep into them by the time half-time came.
Killer managed to get his a bit of a CV in there as well, didn't he, Killer?
I hated it, but it gives context, so I had to put it in there. Never again. I apologise for that.
CV,
guys.
And if anyone's listening from Golker, Liversidge, anyone like that,
I'll tell you what, Killer, you can't play in as worse as that. I don't like to... This is a joyous podcast, but let's get it out of the way. Ben Jackson, it's a long time since I've seen an half of football from a town player as bad as that, and we've had a lot to pick from. He were absolutely atrocious. And luckily, Brighton Rat saw that and took him up at half-time. And everyone has a bad day, but this was his moment, wasn't he? And he was awful, wasn't he? Absolutely awful. You know, he couldn't even pass to his own players. got that horrible booking, and I thought he might even get sent off here at this rate. But yeah, I think Steve Chicken referred to him as a mare or a stinker. But he were, honestly, his fullbacks this year might have been woeful, haven't they, as a rule of thumb.
I mean, Brody Spencer's come in and done quite well, hasn't he? But, Nakayama, we miss Nakayama, don't we? He would have added quite a lot, I think, under this. But it's just the way it's gone. We'll talk about Ben Jackson at the end, because I'm going to wrap him up with Tom Edwards as well. But yeah, Jaheim Headley came on at halftime. I mean, when halftime came, did you think that we'd maybe missed an opportunity with the wind? Because the corners that Saab were putting in from the inswingers were really causing a lot of issues. And there was one where he hit it low, and it's a valid tactic I've seen him do. And people think he's trying to hit hit the first man, but he's put quite a few intentionally low, and it kind of skims through the box. And one skimmed right through, and I think it was Bojan at the far side just couldn't get enough on it. And I was thinking with us and set pieces, I was thinking, have we missed the opportunity here to win the game, Poz?
I think Killer said it earlier, mate. I think wind is, it's one of those, isn't it? You know, anyone who's ever played football, you know, you turn up at a pitch and wind's blowing directly down, or you're slightly downhill, and you think, do you know what? Yeah, when we play downhill, everything will just be, it'll just be easier. And it, many, many times I've played in that situation, actually playing uphill is easier because the ball doesn't run away from you as much. When it's windy like that, all it takes is your touch to just be a little bit wrong, and all of a sudden it's running away from you. At least when you're playing into it, it kind of rolls back to you. So when halftime came, my first thought kind of weren't, oh no, we're going to be against the wind now. It's going to be more difficult. I think we dealt with it a little bit better than Millwall. Certainly Sauber Thomas tried to kind of put them kind of cut balls across and kept them quite low. We seemed a little bit more savvy with it than Millwall did. But I thought first half we probably could have created a little bit more, but certainly going in, it just seemed a bit. It would. I know you've got it on there that second half really not a lot happened, but first half for me was very similar. It just seemed one of those games. I was quite surprised by Millwall's setup. I know Killer's touched on it, but I thought they would have seen this as an opportunity to come to us and potentially get the win to almost, I won't say guarantee safety because you could never say that in Championship, but almost kind of put a decent amount of points between us. And maybe because there's so many games left, they thought, you know what, if we do come away with a point, it's a good result. But for me, I thought if they'd have gone for it a little bit more in that first half, they would have quite easily.
You say creative. I was thinking on Thursday, once I heard, Radoni went out. I thought, where's his creativity? We've been banging all season, we haven't got any. Mr. Creativity that we've only got has gone. When I saw midfielder Matos and Kazumu, I was thinking, how the hell are we going to create anything? And then add an 80 miles an hour gale, and you've got no chance. Honestly, it's embarrassing, isn't it? It's absolutely embarrassing. Kazumu's forward play shooting, it honestly is banned from going in into forward territories and that as well. I know what you wanted, but I just looked and thought that's I think why everyone were really on a downer. I think everyone were looking, thinking, where's this creativity come from? And obviously we're going to come on to the goal later on, but Leeds fans were bannering me like that the other week, says you're just a set piece team. You're a set piece team, and we are. It's just total truth. We've got nothing else to offer, and I just thought, how are we going to create anything in that as well? The one thing that we have missed off with that, it was like that Manu, although Manu smashed top corner today, but that Karoma shot, I thought it were kind of headed in a little bit, first half that. Mm. But he's the only one who can kind of, a bit of magic now and again. But I was really downbeat just seeing that team line up. But, because people were telling me like formations and is he going to go for it? But I just look at the tools at his disposal and there's just no one there. And it's in that middle that's going to do it. And yeah,
I was going to say, just to stick up for Ben Jackson, there were 8 players with the worst passing accuracy than him yesterday. So that's one fear there, Cossie. So second half, I mean, it was one where it was a war of attrition, if you like, wasn't it? It was just one of those halves where it was like an arm wrestle. It's almost like watching Huddersfield Giants. If you watch Huddersfield Giants, they're a very boring rugby league outfit who just sort of run up the middle and kick it. And it was very much very similar to that, wasn't it? Just run up the middle and kick it for the corners.
Matt, I really felt it. But when you watch them 10-minute highlights, it made me think, God, were we better than I thought? Because it were only us putting forward, we were creating stuff were happening. And the commentator, I don't know if he just commentates it off the highlights. I think he does for the club.
Yeah, I think he does.
Yeah, and he were like, oh, so pushing, they're really going for it, they're this, that, and the other. And I'm thinking, were we a bit arse yesterday? You know, but it just felt it was dreadful to watch. Two bad teams. But when I look at that, I'm just thinking, there's one team trying to win it here, one team going forward, one team unlucky, there was stuff flashing across the box. And it made me kind of think, just before we come on air here, it's like, what, it as bad as we thought last night? Or maybe we...
I'll be honest, I thought it was pretty bad. I can't really recall too much. There was the Berzog shot, wasn't there?
You said it was disgusting.
I thought it was a really bad game, but... But it's one of those where who cares? We've won the game. Yeah. And, I mean, the second half, all I remember it really is the Bergzorg chance and then Town not really doing much. I want to sort of talk about Ben Wiles a little bit, because you mentioned Matos and Kasumu, but the thing is with those two is that the number six is the sitting midfielders in a 4-4-2 system. So the onus isn't on them to create anything. It's on the wide players to create something. But Brighton Wright has seen that and he's kind of... And then he's put Ben Wiles on. And I know Ben Wiles has had a lot of detractors this year and he's not done as well as maybe what he would have wanted to. But when he came on, he sort of tried to grab the game by the scruff of the neck. And I know he's more of a box-to-box, another box-to-box type. But there were two passes that he did which really sort of opened up the game. And it's just exactly what Town needed. There was a moment where he played the ball out wide to Sauber Thomas. And Sauber Thomas went down the left-hand side, put the ball in, and Healy heads it and it goes wide. That's the first chance Healy had. But that's all brought on by an early, direct, quick ball by Ben Wiles. And that's what we've been lacking for years and years and years. And it's a great ball. And then the other one as well at the other side, it starts with Ben Wiles hitting one to the far right-hand side. And I think slightly later, that's where Jaheim Headley gets forward at that and wins the corner where we score from. And the goal itself is... I know I've sat there and I've moaned about outward corners, but it's a good corner, isn't it, from Sauber? And Matty Pearson's header is fantastic. In fact, it's a drilled one, isn't it? And Matty Pearson's header is brilliant. He gets up brilliantly behind the defender, and it's a brilliant save from Sarkic, a really good save. And then Healy's on hand, and that's what we've missed, isn't it, with Reece Healy? We've missed a striker who drops into striking positions, who knows where the ball's going to end up and he knows where the ball's going to rebound. He's moving into an area where he knows a header's coming in and it's going to go across goal and he's moving for the deflection. And it's just that intelligence that, not to do down Caroma and Bergzog, who've run the legs off at times, you know, this season, but they don't have that natural instinct that a Reece Healy does or maybe a Boyan does. And it's just... It's not a great goal when you look at it, but it's a great goal for us because this is exactly what we've lacked all season. And Reece Healy scored two goals at home now, just sniffing poachers, you know, poaching chances. And it goes a long way in football. If you've got someone who can stick the ball in the back of the net, you're halfway there. And I just wish, boys, he could play more than 30 minutes at the minute, because he's if we stay up this season, then a couple more goals from him would go a long way to doing that, wouldn't it, Poz?
Yeah, it's amazing. You play a striker in a striking position and you know what happens. Scores goals, doesn't it? You know, you've talked about Caroma and Bergzog, you know, not really having that instinct, but they're not going to, because for me, they're both wide players then who have just been asked to play up front for, you know, like a period of time until we can get an actual striker on the pitch. But yeah, fantastic bullet header back from Matty Pearson. As good old centre halves there doing, you know, getting us out of jail once again. And yeah, if Healy's not on, does that fall to him or does it just drop into space and they kick it clear? But it was incredible feeling. You know, you watch 93 minutes of nothingness, really, almost Sunday league football at times, and you sat there thinking, you know what, you know, we're done, we're down. You know, looking at live score and you know, checking other results, and you're seeing all that, and then you know, 30 seconds later, you're falling over a barrier at front because you've popped one in at 90, you know, last gasp winner, and all of a sudden everybody's perspective changed, and I think the scenes yesterday when that goal went in, I know you look around the stadium and it weren't just, you know, the areas which you'd expect to be going mental. It was the whole stadium just kind of just outpouring of relief, probably more than anything else, that goal had gone in. And do you know what it did for me, Mike? Just it ignited a little bit of hope that had all but gone. You know, you're running on absolute empty, and that just for morale there, that goal means so much more with it. I know it sounds silly, but with it being in the last minute, if you win that 1-0 and we get a goal in the 38th minute, and you know, the game peters out, and everyone still comes away thinking, do you know what, we did all right, but we were, you know, it was a crap game. Yeah, we've won, but you kind of get a goal at that last gasp minute, and you kind of forget about everything else that's gone before you. So I think the manner of the goal is far more important than the goal itself, if that makes sense.
You were Tom Ince vibes, mate, all over again in Watford. You were Tom Ince vibes. The noise that echoes off our microphones is unbelievable. And I always think, obviously, last minute goals are unbelievable, but when it's a, oh, yeah, I remember what that was. I can't remember another game it was similar, because obviously it filmed you guys going absolutely nuts at the start. No, yes. And you know what? There's no strikers on this pod, is there? We've got a right back here. We've got a goalkeeper. What are you, Paz?
Centre half, me. So we've got a good defensive line.
Right. I've watched this back about 10 times.
What were you, Cozzy? Cozzy, what were you as a player?
I'm a winger, mate.
A winger?
I'm a tricky winger, mate. I'm an unselfish.
He's been winging
winger.
This podcast for years, hasn't he? But go on.
But I think if Healy edited it up, if Healy had edited it straight, I think that guy's heading it back and off the line. I'm going to give him credit for like that striker. I don't know because it comes in at fast, but he edited it up like. And he just looped a little bit over the guy. I think if he's just gone straight at it, like maybe a centre half, I don't think that goes in. Who knows? It goes in. But honestly, it makes you think if Healy were around, Matt, I honestly think we'd be fine. I think
it's
we'd
clever
be
though. That finish, Cozzy, that finish is clever. And I had a quick look at his stats for this season, Healy. So for us, right, he's played 290 minutes, but he played at ACM. He played as a 10 a bit, didn't he, Matt, in a couple of games at the beginning?
Yeah, and wide against QPR, yeah.
So for us so far, including this weekend, he's played 176 minutes as a striker and bagged two goals. So he's scored 88 minutes per goal, right? That's what he's on at the moment. So one a game, right? And I thought, oh, that's he's only a short period of time. It can't be like that entire career, can it? Anyway, at Watford this season, exactly the same. 193 minutes, two goals, 96 minutes per goal, right? Okay, again, he'd only scored two. Doesn't really matter, whatever. Let's go back past it all. Went through his entire career. He's had a year or two at Connors Quay in Wales. He scored like 14 in 20 or something there, which is a bit of a Farmers League, right? Farmers League. Let's take that out. And then we go, but the rest of him, like Toulouse, good quality League One teams where he's been before. He averages a goal every 135 minutes. I'm with you, Cozzy. If he plays this entire season, I think we're not even in this trouble, because these games have been so tight. When you've got a striker like that who can finish smartly, it looks like an easy tapping, like you say, Cozzy, from that rebound from the keeper. It's not. It's a very intelligent finish. It's calm. He didn't snatch. He's barely played yet. He's still calm enough just to put it into the roof of the net and make sure we score there. He is a top-notch nine. Already you can see it. Injuries are his problem. He wouldn't be with us, I don't think, if he hadn't suffered what he'd been through in the last couple of years. But he can score goals. He can score good goals. And crucially for us, he can score goals when it matters, because not everybody can.
Oh, we're unbelievable. I mean, Ward had that flashing header before. I mean, we're an odd chance with that, to be fair. And I'm thinking, because I was thinking, why is Ward on before him? But it all worked out in the end. But the scenes, though, honestly, I know we've how many times we've gone about fans on this podcast, but it was absolutely wild. It's just incredible. It's like, honestly, we're just like Wagner at that derby. He gets his bugs, Brighton Riders getting submerged by everyone. And it was just unbelievable, the raw. And number of people that commented on just Twitter last night, just like the raw, like they're putting that love eyes on that emoji. Because it's just, honestly, it's just been such a season of pretty much misery, hasn't it, and that as well. And but I know some serial, I'm going to, they'll be listening to this. I know some serial disappearing off before the enders. Who didn't disappear before the end. And it was just one of those games, I think, because it were almost as last chance saloon, I thought. We had to get them two extra points, and nobody, you didn't see many leaving early, I don't think, yesterday, because I don't know if we were just up or just they wanted to be there when that whistle went, but someone put, we were about 2 minutes from just the biggest boo ever. So someone on Facebook put 2 minute football, what can you say? There's 2 minutes from the loudest boo you'll have. That probably meant we're relegated to that. It just, the emotions is, what a game when it just goes for you like that. And Millwall fans, a woman I'm thinking, because my friend, policewoman, I was talking to her after the game, and she had to escort all their coaches back on M1 and that as well. And Paz, I thought that's going to go off on that as well. But to be fair, they took it quite well. But it's, what a moment though. But, and then I'm thinking, it could count for nothing. That's how scary our predicament is. But it would just, oh, I'm honestly, man. That
you mean like the Delroy Facey moment against QPR? Boo the as the one-on-one.
Don't be saying that to me.
it's not the last home game that season with Birmingham at home.
Well, Edley's got to get big credit, Matt, because he just kept going. And he set up like two goals. I can't in that corner, even though it wanted his assist. But obviously it's Stoke, you know, he threaded the ball for Dulovic. But again, it's almost like that naivety. I don't know naivety, but that just keep running, just keep going, mate. You know, just, I don't know, where sometimes everyone seems to stop and then pass it back and that as well. But I didn't have any expectation for that corner. I don't know about you guys. I didn't think, right, this is it. Come on. I just thought it's kind of just going to peter out.
You
nothing.
Just sat there going, just blow the whistle. Get this over.
It's funny. We're always going to be a goal like that, though, wasn't it? Like you've said, because there's not a lot of creativity. We don't really score.
It's not a lot of bravery. It's
well-worked goals. We're very industrial, aren't we? And them sort of goals are... You know, that's what we talk about being a set piece team, but that's kind of like what we are. But you know, you talked about the scenes at Nkosi, and you know, a little story from Saturday when I think it were in the first half. You know, when Karoma had that block kind of off at line. I turned to my mate, and for some reason, you know, I wasn't really enthralled by it. It wasn't one of them where, you know, like normally in a relegation fight, you're thinking, come on, you know, and you're up and down. And when that happened, I kind of just stood there and just thought, well, that's just typical, isn't it? You know, really good chance. It's not gone in. It's kind of like, I want on edge of my seat kind of thing. And then when goal goes in the last minute, all of a sudden, you're dancing around like a lunatic. And like you say, it's just what football does to you, isn't it? It's just an incredible feeling. And it's why you keep going, to be fair. You know, look how bad we've been. It's so easy to think, do you know what, I'm not going to go today. But those moments live so long in the memory that even if you do go down, you'll still talk about that goal in 10 years' time. Say, do you remember that goal that Reece Healy scored against Millwall last minute and everyone went mental? You kind of forget that we went down that season. That games pass you by, but moments, you know, stay forever. And that, for me, will be one of them that, you know, I'll tell my grandkids about that goal. Even though it means nothing, or it could mean nothing, you'll just remember that, because that feeling, you just cannot get that feeling anywhere else.
I saw your little lad going mad as well, which was good.
Oh, I loved it, mate. Yeah, he nearly got crushed by someone. I think someone came, if you look on video, someone comes flying down from about four rows and nearly crushes him at front. But afterwards, he's like, that was brilliant, wasn't it, Dad? It was ace.
Jose, well, we had vibes all week, mate, because I expected you to do a banner or a TIFO or come on or some kind of social media post. Come on, this is we now or never. And it's almost like everyone's just, I can't be asked for that. I've had enough of this club. I've had enough of this team. Bollocks to it. And it felt like that in town centre, mate, before it were empty. There were no, come on, we can still do it. A number of people speaking, we're done, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was really weird. We were about games last week, when people listen to scores. It were all happening. Like, Wednesday, we knew Wednesday has scored again, and I don't look at scores. And then someone says, oh, Leicester have winning. And then all of a sudden, that were right late on. So I'm thinking, ooh, you know, even if it gets a draw, we're still in there. And then all of a sudden, we score, and it turns on its head again and stuff, and then you're bringing others back into it. But it's just a bit of a weird one. I don't know if it's because it's one season too many fighting against it, but there just doesn't seem to be that. Although, to be fair, the crowd did get behind the team, and I know if Brighton Wright were playing a bit of a cheerleading role, but I don't know, it just don't feel like, maybe this is what it needed last night, just to get everyone to press. I think we'll take a couple of thou on Tuesday, and it'll be different. I think I know people who's like saying they're going on Tuesday, we're probably nowhere near it if we haven't got that winner. So maybe that has ignited the Mel Booth, you said, ignite the fan base or whatever. But maybe it is that moment that's got everyone back on board, because I didn't feel it. We're like, even though Kevin Nagle were there, he's kept a low profile coming back. It was a strange one yesterday, mate. I didn't feel it were a crunch time kind of everyone come on, because I was getting stick from my post. Molly, you'll give me a bit of answers in the last 3 weeks, but I was trying to get everyone fired up. And when I got into Crown yesterday, like, here he is, cheerleader again. But like, what point? If we might as well be going down, then just don't come.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll watch rugby this afternoon. It does annoy me that, though. We've still got it
all. It leads on nicely, does that, Cozzy, to the booing of Ben Jackson, which I didn't hear, to be honest. I just know Andrew Brighton wasn't happy about it. And people are, I mean, you've got 11 players out there who are fragile in confidence at the minute. I know Huddersfield fans are annoyed, but don't boo a player onto the pitch. Fuck's sake. I mean, Tom Edwards has come on. Okay. He's not everybody's favourite player. People still remember the Leeds game, don't they? But one of the last times he came on, I mean, he turned the game around against Watford and got an assist, didn't he? Mm-hmm. I know people would have wanted, I think people around me, the noises were pretty much, we want Pat Jones. They wanted the other Welsh winger. What was his name? Dick Coswicky over there. you know, Pat Jones, I think they just wanted another attacking sub to throw on and Tom Edwards coming. So I don't know if it was specifically Edwards that was getting booed, or whether it was just that a defender was coming on.
I don't know what from that got booed on there. I think it's more because it's the one that someone else done rather than him. But if I were him, I'd be thinking, no, they're booing me. And obviously, I'm giving some stick and social media. I give him some stick after Man City on there. So, but I just hate it, mate. I totally agree with you. It's horrible, that, isn't it? It's
counterproductive, and it's sad in a way that the club are having to sort of say, constantly preach togetherness, because we've seen it does work. We saw last season it worked. We saw under David Wagner how it worked. And I think some people just... I'm of the opinion that if you go to a game, you get behind the team, and then at the end, if they let you down and you want to boo, knock yourself out. I'm not bothered. But during the game, it's like just that's the moment where you've got to do your own little bit, you know what I mean, and things as fans. I mean, people will always argue, I pay and I'll do what I want. And if that's your prerogative, that's fine. We just don't see eye to eye on that. But I just don't get the booing of players onto the, you know, and it's just bizarre. And like you said, Bergsorg, I know he's an annoying, frustrating figure sometimes, but he's done good for us at points this year. I don't get it. I don't know if this is sort of social media causing issues to flare up, you know, like and whatnot. But I mean, it doesn't help, does it? If, you know, we saw Tom Edwards come on and he shanked two or three passes really badly, didn't he? They were pretty bad.
The question is, though,
you can ask the question, does he do that if he doesn't get booed on and he's shitting himself? You know, there's the sort of, I mean, only he can answer that. I mean, he may have, he may not have, but it just doesn't help. And I mean, and I'm just hopeful now that we've got that goal in the last minute, and then people are just going to go, do you know what? There's a little bit of trust comes back in the team, because I don't think there's a lot of trust in the team either. And hopefully people are a little bit more patient, and we've got two away games coming up, which are difficult. But, you know, if we get something from them, then, you know, we need everybody really helping against Swansea and Birmingham. I was watching the Rangers-Celtic game today, and Celtic were 2-0 up, and when Rangers scored, the roar and everything, you could see the Celtic players shit themselves because of, you know, the roar of the Rangers fans in Ibrox. And it helped Rangers get back into the game, and it does help. Honestly, it helps. It does put players off. If you sit there on your hands or you're quiet and you're booing your own players, that gives the opposition a boost. I mean, we said it last season, just as fans, just give it your all until the end of the season. If they let you down after 90 minutes, vent your spleen. You know, I'm on board with that. I choose not to. I just go home and do this. But, you know, if that's your thing at the end, if they've let you down at the end of a game, fair enough. You know, but during the game, come on, just let's stick together during the game. And at the end, then, you know, you either do what you want. That's just the way I think about it. But Killer, you take us into maybe
Dino used to say, town fans like players that are honest and work hard, and they can forgive a lot of other things if they work hard, right? I think when it comes to Edwards and Bergsorg and players of this ilk, the fans are kind of on the back a little bit, because they've seen things before in games where I think they feel the players haven't given their all. That's what happened with Tom Edwards at Leeds. I think people feel like he gave up. I thought he gave up watching it myself.
He never even started, Killer. Never
gave up. No, to be fair, I think that's probably a fair way to put it, positive. But I think it takes a long time for fans to get past that, and town fans hold on to that kind of stuff. I think you can't say, oh, well, we're fine having non-technical players on as long as they give it their all, and that's great. What a lovely set of fans we are. That's okay, but then the flip side is, if you don't give your all, we'll call you out for it. And I think that's where it is with town fans. And Edwards, yeah, he did well at Watford. They booed him yesterday, came on and were pretty atrocious initially. But then again, I suppose the substitution worked because we've won the game in the end. So you can sit there and say, Brighton, right, he got it back.
Game changer, Tom Edwards, game changer.
I think it's a bit, I don't know where I stand with it, because like we were talking last week about understanding the scores. Now, if Matty Pearson knows we need to win yesterday's game, that's where he goes and heads it like he does. Or did he not know? Like these kind of things can influence how a game plays out. And I do think if fans are making themselves known to the manager, it can change the manager's decisions going forward. So I can't sit here and say I'd never boo halfway through a game. I possibly would. And I do think it can make a difference. But it is really important, like you say, Matt, from here to the end of the season, that everybody gets behind him as much as possible, because it really can drag us forward an extra point or two. It can be the difference between staying in this division and dropping one. Another thing, I think, quickly, when it comes to fullbacks and town, people haven't really noticed that all our fullbacks are struggling because we've gone back to this back four system and our fullbacks aren't good enough. We don't have two starting quality first team fullbacks, I don't think, at the club anymore. Brody Spencer's kind of finding his way into it, and he's done a really, really good job. But you can say Jackson's terrible. You can say Healy's awful when defending. You've also got to remember, one of these fullbacks have Sauber Thomas defending in front of him. So he has a very, very tough job. But if you look at the players that we have, that fans think are the weakest we have in our starting 11, it's always the fullbacks. And I think at that point, it's important to question why that's the case. I think when one person has a bad game, and then followed by somebody else comes in, he has a bad game in that position again and again and again and again. It's kind of a systemic problem rather than just the individual themselves. And I think that's obviously overlooked by a lot of people too.
Do you think, Killer, that comes from multiple changes in managers, in systems? And, you know, we've talked about recruitment many a time, and we'll probably still talk about recruitment, but we've never had someone in dugout long enough to even probably assemble a squad to fit a formation that particular manager would like to play. Like, if you said to me, like, what's the style of football that Huddersfield Town play at the moment, it'd just be like, well, I've absolutely genuinely no idea from one week to next, because, all right, injuries have played a part in chopping and changing formations, but we change managers that often that we've not been able to recruit to a set system. And I think this is probably now why we're finding the fact that, you know, we're struggling at fullbacks, we're struggling in centre midfield for creativity, because there's no one there saying, look, these are the players that we need to buy this time, and then next time we'll buy X, Y, and Z, and then next time we'll do this, because they get one shot, they get one window, and then they're sacked, basically. So I think we've probably created that problem ourselves. I fully agree with you, by the way. I think we are the weakest at fullbacks, but we need to keep someone in the dugout long enough to have two or three windows to be able to transition the squad that we've currently got to a squad that can play a system that he wants to play.
No, you're right. You're totally right, Pozza. And I think it's also important to consider that normally if a fullback's doing a good job, the person in front of them is the same guy for quite a long period of time. Good teams Definitely. Have good partnerships within them. And if we don't have any partnerships, our left back and left winger, or right back and right winger, they've changed all season, all the time. We're trying new players in new positions and new systems, like you say. And it's really, really tough, because every other team normally plays a front three, and the wingers are really important when it comes to creating goal scoring opportunities. And our fullbacks have a tough job because they don't know who they're playing with in what system. Yeah. And even on what side, Jackson's playing left back yesterday. And Matt and I talked about it before. I suggested that he should play left back. And after yesterday, I can't believe he didn't bring that up. Oh, Matt, I thought that might be being thrown straight at me.
I don't want to hammer. I mean, Ben Jackson had a hard time, didn't he, on Saturday? I don't want to add to that. Go on.
No, but that's it. There's no partnerships. There's been nobody on this, like, set in stone on either side, and it's made it very, very difficult. Looking forward to next season. Of course, we're not there yet. The next five games are crucial, but we have to sort that out. You have to start having standard block players in certain positions so they can learn how other players in the team play, because we look very, like, there's no continuity at all whatsoever. No patterns of play, and it's all because of the chopping and changing through necessity, yes, but also through managerial changes, Poz. That's really caused this kind of problem for me.
Nice to see Ollie Turton back, though.
He could still play a part, Matt, I wonder.
Maybe. He's a tough... big actor, I tell you what was it? Good to see, as well as Turton. It was really good to see the players celebrating with the manager as well, which shows the unity that we wanted. And Brighton Wrighter on the pitch at the end, you know, you could see players responding to him. I'm not going to use the Wagner. I think that's a bit of a lazy comparison, isn't it, at this point? But you could just see players responding to a manager that they like, and, you know, making people laugh and things, and when players run to the manager when they score, I think that's always a really good sign as well. So I enjoyed that, and I enjoyed Brighton Wrighter calling people out as well. He doesn't take any crap either, does he?
This is what gives me a lot of confidence with wherever we are next season. I'm hoping he's going to stay, because he's not held back in his interviews, mate. He came out with, for me, it changed that Rotherham one where, obviously, everyone, well, why didn't you go for the win, and why didn't you bring X, Y, and Z on and stuff? And he really went, because Johnny Buchan kind of messaged me, said, oh, what do you want me to ask him something? And I said, I kind of armed him with that question, like, well, why did we shut shop in Rotherham? And he didn't answer it. And then all of a sudden, I think further on in the press conference, it was a bit like that Warnock moment when he just kind of engineered a bit of a rant, you know, against Nagel with the signings. That he's got signed and whatever. So I just get the impression, Matt, that when you've won promotions and like won a top flight league like he has, you've got to have respect for this guy. And I just feel that he's learning. He knows, in my eyes, who he wants there next season and who he wants out. He's no mug, mate. And I really believe he can sort it out, mate. I really do. You know, in whichever division we're in. And people keep saying, well, they don't see much difference in football. New manager bounce and all this bollocks about, you know, because we got that win in Watford. And you know what? If you had a top-class squad there and this kind of football hadn't really taken off and stuff. But these players there that have been on relegation battles for 2-3 years, they kind of just mentally fatigued with it. He's trying to nurse everything through. I honestly believe we've got something special there to come. And I, like I said, that little side shot, Matt, where they keep showing bench cam now, don't they, on these videos and stuff. Everyone was off. Everyone was off. And but I just get the impression he's one of those guys. He's like, I'm your friend, but you don't mess about with me. He just feels like, man, you don't F me about because you won't be in my plans and stuff like that. That's when we've seen him make brutal decisions on Matos. It took him a while to get back in, and now all of a sudden, I really think that we've got the man to change our fortunes. I'm desperate for us to stay in this division because I think he can do it in that, mate, given the tools by the board.
Especially with the pre-season as well. But, I mean, Kozic, could you remember... I was thinking those games where you win 1-0 and Pozza talks about moment the moment as well. He'll tell his grandkids about the 1-0 win over Millwall. I'm not sure that'll quite.
I will. I definitely will now.
It's time when we got relegated, but Reece Ealy scored against Millwall. I mean, can you think of many sort of? I mean, we've had a lot of stinky games over the past, but where you know you rag one in the 90th minute and no one gives a shiny shit about what happened in the previous 90 odd minutes, and because you've won 1-0 and everybody's going around.
Dinner time. I'd have had a few lined up on that as well.
I know, I've thrown this in quite late. I mean, was the
maybe that Ben Thornley won against Wolves, mate?
I was going to say against Wolves,
but it was a dreadful game, wasn't it? And took his top off and Jacko down the touchline, and we were top of the league then, weren't we? And after that,
I was thinking more the was it the year after when John Dyson scores the header in the last minute and we win 1-0.
Where were that at?
Against Wolves at home. Against Wolves.
Another Wolves win, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, we always beat Wolves, don't we?
Yeah.
But there's just those stinky sort of games where you just rag ass something at the last minute just to, I mean.
That Derby game, mate, obviously we run about that. We Wagner, that, I remember that being a dreadful game, wasn't it? 1-0 win that later on. Well, I remember thinking that was dull as all, but it was in the promotion year. It's easy to remember that.
Oh, yeah. You are
right.
Chunga header.
Yeah, you are right though, mate. It's like I'm trying to think of a stinky season when we didn't really do a lot, when we just got a late winner. But it just, like Pos said early on, it's totally true that, you know, we score that after 28 minutes and then we just ball it and scrap our way to the end. It's like you don't remember it like that. But it's just, honestly, you just, that interview with Reece Ealy that were done afterwards as well on club television, it was interesting because you were just like, you know, it's going to roll on Tuesday. I keep everyone's hearing saying this. Everyone were like, God, rolling the end of the season. Now everyone wants to go on Tuesday at Preston. And I think, the only thing that worries me a little bit, Tuesday, is like people say Preston's got nothing to play for, which is not true because they can still get in that. It's a long shot, but they've got to get 3 points. So it's a different
time, the top six form in the form table as well. So yeah, it's going to be a difficult one.
And everyone knows, there's only Paul that's seen it with a win at Preston.
You've seen Loic Iheanacho.
I remember it, mate. I remember it.
I went to cup game, me though. Then I got wrong one. Pos went Boxing Day, but I've never seen it. So maybe I'll
tell my grandkids about that victory at Preston.
Right. Let me get you a ticket for Tuesday, mate, and get you sitting there. But it's, honestly, all it's done though, it's given us up. It's really weird, and it's kind of. I had to check the table today to realise where we were. It almost feels so euphoric because we had won for ages. It was dramatic, and Sheffield Wednesday won as well. It's not. It's given us much. He's just giving us up. That tweet I put out, that Wednesday guy went here, says Huddersfield when Sheffield Wednesday win and trying to get our bottom three, they had that picture of Barcelona, peak Barcelona. And, they can honestly mind, mate, Wednesday, every time we win, you win and stuff. But it's, they've got Norwich on next week.
I'm just like, why won't Sheffield Wednesday piss off? Why won't you die, Sheffield Wednesday?
I know,
they're saying the same as us. I mean, Plymouth got that win at Rotherham as well. I mean, it was a bit of a poor game that I watched bits of it, and it wasn't particularly great. But you know, they probably watch ours and say the same thing.
Well, that's where the pressure were on, Matt, because we knew that on Friday, and then honestly, it were like watching a funeral where Bratton Rat's press conference Thursday. Redone is out, Ogg's done his shoulder, Balker's done his quad, blah blah. And I'm just thinking, he's just not meant to be this season. It's just this is how it is. And then the game pans out Wednesday or two up. You're thinking, yeah, he's right. This is it. And then all of a sudden, bang, I just hope we can grab this kind of lifeline that we've got on that as well. And you wonder, because Millwall looked like they got away from it, Matt, and all of a sudden, shocking result to us, even worse result against Rotherham. And I don't look too far up. I'm just thinking, can we get what we need to get? What do we need, Killer, do you reckon? Two wins and a draw? Two more wins, maybe?
Well, the thing is, Cozzy, going into this weekend, I thought we needed two wins and two draws. I thought 8 points would be enough, right? But then everyone's won, and I'm kind of coming out of this weekend thinking we still need to win two and probably draw one. I think we need another 7 points now. So even though we've won, I don't think we're actually better off because everybody else has kind of done their business as well. But like you said, the amount of pressure at the end of that game to get a goal is massive, because if we don't win this game, if we haven't won and we've drawn, it'd be I can't even talk about it. I'm getting shivers. But it would have been absolutely horrendous, wouldn't it? But everyone keeps winning. And I've kind of been hoping and saying that the gap between, I don't know, 20th and 21st would start drifting, and that you kind of be just focusing on bottom four or bottom five, and you kind of know a little bit better then because so-and-so are playing Leicester. So they're unlikely to get anything. You can kind of work it. I ain't got a clue now. This is at least it's still in our hands because of the win. But I think two wins and a draw, but that might be over-egging it a little bit. I don't know what
you reckon. It is funny though. You win like eight games all season. You've got six left, and you're like, yeah, we'll just win three. it's just that easy. We'll just get three wins out of the last six. You know, we've only won eight all. You know,
we won 15% of our games all season.
We're just going to win them all. But every team does, don't they? It's so weird how football goes.
I think the concerning thing is, though, and I'd sort of play the party pooper, but we were rubbish. I know we won. We were awful. We got a lot of injuries. We didn't play well at all. I know it's all about the result, but you're wanting to see something a bit better to think that we can go to Bristol and Preston. But then again, this is a championship where it just makes you look a mug talking stuff like this. That's the only thing that worries me in the back of my mind, is just thinking we've won, but I know you can say, well, if you win when you don't play well, and like it's like Man United got a job there, they would often want Liverpool to win by so many. But it's like, can we lift this game to get 3 points at Deepdale on Tuesday or Bristol? I think we've got to win one of them. I don't know if 2 points.
Yeah, I do. I think we need to win one of those, because I don't think we'll win both the remaining home games.
How do you think we'll approach it, Matt, though? I mean,
same as we did. Same as we have been doing. I think we'll be cautious, to be honest, and then hope to soak anything up. But Preston are strong, aren't they? You know, they play a lot of direct ball. So, you know, Michael Helic, who was great, has to continue to be great. But I think what we need to do, Cozzy, I think we need to take a swift break, aren't we? Because we're in serious danger of running way over on this podcast like we never do. But just
like old times, lads. We'll just do an hour and then 3 hours later, still saying.
Exactly. But just one final word for George Honeyman. We don't tend to do Whopper of the Week anymore, do we? But George Honeyman, what a phallus that guy was. You know what I mean? It just scrapping all game, you know, trying to get Sauber Thomas sent off, didn't he? And then Mark Cartwright saw him off down the tunnel, didn't he? He stood there like a bouncer wanting his suit, Mark Cartwright, you know, just big baldy bouncer. And then George Honeyman flapping his gums away. I thought, what an absolute knobhead that guy was.
I think it was bad on them, Matt. Yeah, he won't be good. The crowd were like losing interest in the game. Yeah, and all of a sudden, that incident, that Tom Edwards thing where he went head to head, I just thought it was comedy, but he got everyone into it. And that Sauber Thomas thing, I was just hoping he wasn't going to get sent off, because he went absolutely rad with Thomas. He was going for the money.
That one with Billy Mitchell,
You know what Millwall like? They like to play that image, Neil Harris, and you know all that. But I thought we're a bit, you know, about game management, we've gone about ours being bad. I thought that was poor for them, because it got a bored fan base right on the game, and the crowd got behind it and stayed till the end, which normally everyone goes. So I think, that cost them that, you know.
Yeah, use legs. Right, I think we'll go for a quick break there, and then we'll return with just a couple of bits and pieces after you listen to me and Cozzy shill for McDonald's again.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Cozzy, what's your favourite away day?
Matt, it's got to be the City Ground at Nottingham. Just old school stadium, you're right near the pitch, great atmosphere. But there's nothing like playing at home. Same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app.
At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Right, Kosmala. We don't get any discounts from McDonald's either, which is pretty disappointing, but never mind. Right, I thought one amusing... I've got one amusing thing to go into and then one sort of kind of saddish thing, but I think we'll go with the sad thing first. I just want to wish there was the guy who... I can't quite tell exactly what happened, but in the upper tier, somewhere near me, someone, I think... had an issue, maybe a medical issue, which required some attention. I saw him get carried out, and he was conscious and awake. But just want to, I don't know who his name or anything whatsoever about him. But just wanted to wish the very best to the guy in the upper tier who unfortunately had to leave the game early and missed the Reese Healy goal, which is punishment enough, isn't it? So all the best to that chap who had an issue on Saturday, and thanks to the club, I think the club physios and things came up to check him, and the St. John's ambulance. So it's great that, you know, so many people were attentive and he was conscious when he went out. So that was great. So I've no idea what the issue was. Don't need to go into it, but hopefully he's okay and on the mend. The other thing that was more amusing was Kevin Nagel going into the dressing room and saying, "That's how it's effing done, lads." You know, which, I mean, how would that have gone down with Ron Atkinson as manager or Neil Warnock or something, when Kevin Nagel storms the dressing room and throws his hat down and say, "That's how it's effing done, lads." How would that gone? I mean, I love his enthusiasm and his hair blowing in the wind. He couldn't wait to get on and do his... be a fan with his mate Dave. He's obviously buzzing, wasn't he? His hair, yeah, honestly, I felt... you can't speak about these matters, Cozzy, but my hair was all over the place as well on Saturday. It was horrendous.
That were the best thing for me, Matt, is that Kevin Nagel's seen Huddersfield Town what it can be. He's seen what... I mean, obviously Sacramento have had some great moments and stuff, but he saw why he's bought what he's bought for moments like yesterday. I was so pleased that he were there and buzzing. You could feel it. I mean, that video looked like we'd done like 10 minutes after the whistle, wasn't it? Dave, and I wanted
to live vlogging. What if live vlogging in injury time? I think
5 o'clock in the morning, though, isn't it? Over in Sacramento. I mean, there were some fruity language apart from thinking, Jesus, this is really a professional football club. What's going on here? But you know what? I absolutely love the fact that Kevin Nagel, he deserves that, mate. He's had a lot of stick, a lot of stress, you know, the traveling and stuff. He's not a big chicken, is he? And just to feel that, I wish they, I mean, we had the cam on the bench and the cam following the Calshed Law, but I'd love to see the Nagel cam yesterday when we scored, because, yeah, they were up and seeming proud with club blazer on and everything like that. So I thought, good on you, Kev, mate. You deserve that. And just hope you can see it again in Lancashire on Tuesday night. But it's, there's some really nice stuff, mate, from the club with the social media at the moment. I don't know if they've got new guys in or someone's been retrained or whatever, but I'm really liking the stuff that they're putting out. There's some really good stuff. The Boothy stuff were a masterstroke, because I think it needed people like that, Booth Legends Estates, to kind of get everyone going. I love that, even kind of going back to the playoffs when season paused, camera on you, and, you know, we got bench cam, and we've had, you know, there's some good interviews. I love the one with Reece Healy yesterday. I don't know, it just feels there's some really good stuff that's happening at the moment, and we just need them to finish it off and stay up, because honestly, I think we could have a good future, you know, next season. And what a guy. I mean, when you think Dave Carmichael's got up, what, that game must be 3 a.m. in American time. I mean, he's got his full day ahead to work. He's like, you know, 5 hours interviewing Kevin Nagel in his garden. And what is going on? It just, mate, this is bizarre, but this is Huddersfield Town.
There's all sorts, mate, isn't there? You wanted to touch on, so there's a number of different little bits and pieces, isn't there? There's the open day, which is on the 30th of April, which is celebrating Leeds Road, which is held in the boardroom and the Owen Scott suite, which sounds interesting. I'll be at work, unfortunately, but there'll be a Q&A with Boothie, Jacko, David Taylor. I'd love to get David Taylor on the podcast. I think that'd be a really interesting one to do with him. Mel Booth and Alan Sykes. Alan Sykes was a bit of a legend, wasn't he, on the old videos back in the 90s? I think it was Alan Sykes, was it? Oh, I might be getting confused with Fletcher, actually. But You know, Stephen Chicken's going to be there as well. It's even put Lee Morris of the HTSA Heritage Project will also be in attendance. So if you've got an issue with Lee, you know, he'll happily take you on face to face. I'm only joking. but, you know, there's all sorts. Lee does some really good stuff for the program and what have you. Don't argue with him on social media. There's all sorts going on there. I mean, the sensory room, there was a really good tweet you picked up on as well. I think we all saw it as well, didn't we? There's the sensory room. I mean, Clem, who the old goalkeeping coach of us, has got an autistic son. And I remember when they first started this sensory room, he was very much part and parcel of going around and checking it, and he absolutely loved it. And it was nice to see, wasn't it, that the club reached out to supporter after a Leeds fan was just being a Leeds fan standard, and you know, invited him and his autistic son. I think it's autistic. Apologise if that's not the case. To the game.
What a game! He must think this is how it goes for Town. Unfortunately, you need to break it to him, Simon Daly. That this is not how football works normally, mate.
No, but that was a lovely thing to see. Amazing, as well. I'm glad he's had a good day as well. It looked great. And obviously, you mentioned Boothie's rallying call as well, and which was great. And we all love Boothie. Everyone responds to Boothie. He's the best, isn't he? He's such a great guy as well.
Yeah, you know what, man? We hear about limitations with budget and this club and what we can do in a stadium, this, that, and the other. We've heard all that, and obviously Kevin Hagan wants to change all that. Hopefully, you know, soon he'll get that stadium. But I really like, you know, the people that are in there, really, you know, with limited resources, try and do the best, like, for the community and the club and stuff like that as well. We've obviously, you know, talked about breakfast clubs and stuff like that as well, cycling, the stuff that they do and that as well. There's so much that we do that when you see that outpouring yesterday, like that winner and that, so that's just a combination of so many different, like, people that have made it possible. So to me, that's what matters. I mean, possibly kind of going a bit left field, I'm watching that Man United game today in a pub in York, and there's people there that obviously they're just like the breed of fans now that just,
they don't know what proper football is, mate.
No, they don't, but it's like that community spirit, that sense of belonging that you've got when you go through the turnstile to watch Town. It just means everything, and it means Liverpool go about, this means more, don't this is Liverpool, this means more. But I always say, support your local team, mate, this means more, because it's really weird. I just watched them going mental when Liverpool had scored. I'm thinking, they were like, glasses nearly going over. I'm thinking, wow, it's TV.
Yeah, I watched that and I always think, how are you so bothered? Yeah. You know, I mean, you're not from Liverpool, you're not part of their community, you're not part of the fabric, you're just a hanger-on from the glory days, but who's obviously got a fragile ego that needs feathering, but, you know, there we go. That's all.
No, you need people who care about, I mean, and it's all right for us, we're local guys, we get the community, we get the area, we get the pulse. Someone kind of like Kevin Nagel, that's difficult for him now to come in from like another country and another, you know, like Americans and all that sport. But that's the best thing for me that we've seen so far, because we're still struggling like we always have been. But Kev gets it, mate. You know, we had a thing with Marston's and when he was going in them boozers early on in the town centre. But he knows what it means to the community. And that's why, I mean, obviously we've touched a lot on the season cards next year. Let's fingers crossed that the club are going to kind of do something decent. But it's like, I do feel we've got people at the club now that get there, you know, that know what it means.
Do you want the chant, Cozzy? Do you want the chant? All right, that's enough of Ollie Fisher.
If we stay up, mate, I'll be delighted for Kevin Hagan probably more than anyone, mate, because to put your head on the parapet, like,
let's put his money there.
He said if we go down, obviously he knew League One could be an option when he came in, but like last season. But honestly, mate, it's, you can't but like the guy, and every time I go on that Rivals podcast, Leeds fans are always, I don't know, wound up, but I think they do respect him as a character and that as well. Do you know what I mean? So it's like,
they're bought into their stupid narrative about tickets, which Coventry embarrassed them about, and they tried to do the same with us. But you can't tell Leeds fans that, because it's like talking to a brick wall, isn't it? And Kevin Nagel stood up to him, and they didn't like it.
But he was absolutely exhausted with Kevin Nagel in that video thing yesterday, wasn't he? We're like, I mean, not about Dave Carmichael being exhausted, getting up at 3 a.m. But Nagel looked like he'd been through the mill and back, aren't we all though, mate? But yeah, just a great, great day, and I really hope that we can just kick on now, and these next two away games we can, you know, get at least a win.
One piece of business that came out over the last couple of days is that Paul Bauer will be leaving Huddersfield Town. It came out on the Training Ground Guru. He's been at town for 7 years as a fitness coach. He'll be leaving. I presume, to be honest, that there'll probably be quite a lot of changes. I know the medical department's been changed quite significantly over the last 6 months. I do think there'll be continuing changes at Huddersfield Town. We've seen Anne Hoff go as well. I think Dave Threlfall-Sykes has resigned from the board, but has got a different job. So I think there'll be a lot of different, lot of movement in the summer, depending, you know, whichever division we're in. Be interesting to see if we get a large ex-Stoke mafia in to replace them. But, you know, it'll be, it's going to be an interesting summer for sure. So if that kind of thing interests you, then keep your eyes peeled on places like Training Ground Guru and stuff like that. But Cozzy, I think it's time, mate, don't you? Are you feeling it?
I'm concerned, mate. All to lose here.
Let's go.
When are we going to hold this bold man responsible?
Especially when the shit mech and all like these. Dildo or something. It's dildo. Diode or something. Yeah. Fucking, why don't they just fucking be a bottle, man?
That's why I don't drink, guys. That's why I don't drink anymore. Jesus, so, I remember that.
There we go. So, the pundit game, the original football trivia. Jeez. So, after dispatching Ian Kilroy-Silk over the last couple of weeks, Killer, you can take a break this time. And it's going to be Cozzy flying off, Cozzy versus the world. And Cozzy is flying to Bradford this week. And he's heading to old BD12 to take on Mr. Porritt. So, Pozzy, the rules here are five penalties. So it's like pulse penalties. I know Pozzy mentioned the pulse almost back.
They finished his pulse. It's gone. It's gone, mate.
Pulse DAB is gone.
Yeah, it's got a great states radio and that. No more pulse, man.
Tactic card. I've got no idea what this tactic card is. Right. So, Pozzy, you can choose from the England national team, Italian football, Spanish football, might be one to avoid against Cozzy. Champions League. World Cups.
Come on, Paz, go to Spain, mate.
England in the noughties. That's like Premier League stuff, not the national team. England in the 2010s, which Killer took Cozzy on last week and took him to a sudden death penalty shootout. England in the 90s. German football or the Euros? Don't ask me to repeat all that.
I'm going to say, what were the first one again? I forgot. let's do England in the noughties. Let's go with that one.
Ooh. Right, so.
Not Spanish football. There's no way you'd beat him at that.
Ooh, wow. I know. Or German. He's quite good on German football as well when we did it first week as well. Right, England in the noughts. So this is how we play. So it's five penalties. You can choose to pick an easy or a hard question. You get 2 points if you get the hard one right, 1 point for the easy one. Killer, you can keep score on this one. So, like Cozzy, do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first, second, mate.
All right, so Cozzy goes first, the bear.
I'm going to go hard. I'm going to go hard straight away just to put massive pressure on the debutant, Poz.
All right, so let's have a look at this one. This is very wordy, these questions. This check was brought to Liverpool to replace Steve McManaman and even picking up the number 7 jersey, but his time at the club was sadly characterised by injuries. Few linked to the club will ever forget his goal in the 2005 Champions League final, which turned out to be his last game for the club as he moved to Bordeaux that same summer. He played in all three finals Liverpool won in 2000-2001, the FA Cup, the League Cup and the UEFA Cup. Who am I?
I think it might be Vladimir Smitsa.
He's nailed it. That's 2-0 to the bear already.
2-0 down already.
The bear. He's on fire again.
I wouldn't have got right that then. One myself, to be fair.
Come on, Poz.
Pozzo, are we going easy or are you going hard?
Let's go hard. Go on. Go hard or go
easy,
on.
The easy one, I can tell who that is already without even reading it. So you're going hard, yep.
Yeah. Let's try match
this French right. Oh, I think I know this one as well. This French right back needed a single season with Wigan to convince Tottenham to buy him.
I know.
The London club paid almost $5 million for him in 2006, following a campaign in which he was named in the PFA Team of the Year in front of the likes of Gary Neville, Steve Finnan, and Paulo Ferreira.
Matt, you need to invent a rule that if you don't get it right, then I can nick it.
No rebounds for you, Cosmala.
Tap it off a rebound.
No rebounds.
Oh, I can't even guess, mate. French right backs who played for Wigan and then Spurs.
I know who it is.
No, mate. Put me out of my misery because they go.
Pascal Chimbonda.
It is Pascal Chimbonda.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Right, turning over to Cozzy. Cozzy's
gone. I'm with yesterday, don't I? Going on, isn't it? Yeah.
Easy or hard, Coz?
Easy, mate. I don't want to go too far from...
Easy now. This Argentinian hothead saved West Ham from relegation in 2007 with his goal at Old Trafford. Later that year, he switched to United before acrimoniously moving across the
field. What's his name? Carlos Tevez.
Carlos Tevez. If you'd gone easy last time, Poz, it'd have been Peter Crouch, by the way.
Yeah, they got that.
Poz, come on, mate.
I'm going to go easy. I'm going to go easy just to get a point on board. Hopefully.
This isn't that easy. This English midfielder played for Manchester City, Everton and West Brom in the Premier League. But it is his time with Aston Villa he is probably best remembered for, as he was one of the key men for Villa in the 2000s. He ended up being a huge transfer saga with Liverpool in 2008 that went public with his frustrations of not being sold. He was stripped of the captaincy and fined for his actions. His captaincy was ultimately restored before his move to Manchester City. Who am I? Oh, yeah, I remember when he did this.
Bloody hell, is that an easy one?
Yeah, it's an England midfielder. Well, when I say England midfielder, not a regular, but...
Oh. I should have picked a different category, shouldn't I? Who did he play for again? Just run through clubs, sorry.
He played for... Where are we?
West Brom. Started
his, I think he started his career at Brighton, maybe, but he's not on this. He played for Man City, Everton and West Brom in the Premier League, but it's Aston Villa where he was remembered for being a left-footed central midfielder.
No idea, mate, sorry. This is awful. It's embarrassing.
Is it Gareth Barry?
Was it in the rebound?
I'm going to say we're going to say Gareth Barry, but go on. I didn't think he'd...
What's the score, killer, after two penalties?
3-0 to Cozzy.
I'm just not rubbing it. I don't want to rub it in. I don't want to tell him how far ahead he is. It's
Cozzy, third penalty. Are you going hard or easy?
I'll go easy, mate.
Easy now. This versatile player has played a number of different positions throughout his career, including fullback, winger and centre midfield. He got his Premier League debut before turning 17 and was named the PFA Young Player of the Year in the 2009-10 season.
Is that it? What the hell?
That's it.
What is it? Fullback, wing and what? Centre midfielder?
He's played fullback, wing, centre midfield.
Wow, that's an easy question. What the hell? Leighton Baines?
Incorrect. The answer is James Milner.
Ooh. Good guess, I'm on it. What?
Pause, what are we doing? Hard or easy?
I've never got left three. Let's go hard.
Go on, pause.
Oh, this guy's played for a lot of people. This attacker is part of a small group of players who have managed to score for at least six different clubs in the Premier League. Coincidentally, he shares his last name with another player who has also completed the same feat.
Ooh.
Scoring goals for, he started at Brentford, went to Crystal Palace, Port Vale, Sheffield United, Blackburn, Ipswich, Leicester City, Everton, Charlton, Wigan, Birmingham, Middlesbrough. He's played for a lot. I know who this is. Yeah. There's also a town player had that same surname as well in the late 80s.
Well, that means not to me, Matt. We're only a Ben.
Know your history, man.
I know.
You know your history, Everton.
Just trying to think of common surnames that it might be.
You don't get one right, Pos. Can you imagine that?
Maybe I'll have to retire from a pod again.
I mean, his namesake's often on TalkSport with the same surname, and he played for England. This guy didn't.
Oh, no idea, mate. Absolutely no idea. Seven clubs in the Premier League. Must have been well travelled then.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Like Smith.
Smith. No.
Marcus Bent.
It is Marcus Bent.
Oh, Cozzy, come on.
Cozzy's got this game. I reckon Cozzy's got this all laid out, hasn't he?
I think he's on Google me, mate. Come on. He's using AI. Some AI technology's going on here.
Put your heads up for Dwight York. Come on.
Right. So it's Cozzy for penalty 4, is it, killer?
Yes, it is.
5, isn't it? Is it 4? Right.
Are you going easy or hard, Cozzy?
I'll go easy, mate, just so that Pos can still catch me.
This attacker, who was haunted by injuries throughout his career, represented numerous clubs and in the process got the chance to play in an impressive 5 prominent derbies: Merseyside, North London, Manchester, West London, and the Tyne and Wear. Yeah, it's not who I thought it was.
He's struggling. Look at him.
Yeah, mate. This isn't a guy who's getting this right. Say it, repeat again, Matt, so I can buy some time.
This attacker, who was haunted by injuries throughout his career, represented numerous clubs and in the process got the chance to play in an impressive 5 prominent derbies: the Merseyside Derby, the North London Derby, the Manchester one, the West London Derby, and the Tyne and Wear.
Pass, mate. I'll just be making a fool of myself, I guess.
Knowing me, knowing you.
Saha,
yeah, Louis Saha. Yeah,
I've heard that question before.
Wow, I didn't realise you were Evan money for a bit, yeah.
It's the question's fault for Paul. Oh, that's
still a chance. Go on, mate. Corner. Pearson with the
I think you need to take the hard option here, Pozzler, unfortunately. Because you've fought, yeah. What score is it, killer? Is it 3-0 or 4-0?
3-0.
3-0. So you can take an easy one.
Go on, let's have an easy one.
Negative tactics.
No, in fact, no, go hard, because then he'll put pressure on Cozzy. Let's go hard.
Darren,
pause
on.
No, I've changed, Cozzy. I've thrown 2 strikers on for the last minute. Centre backs are up front.
Up the veil.
I can't even read this.
Just read the easy one instead, Matt.
This Belgian-born Frenchman played for Sunderland, Tottenham and Fulham in the Premier League. Though it was his performances for the latter of these clubs that stand the test of time, such as when he scored a goal and was a constant threat in this match against the defending English champions. He also played more than 170 games for Lyon, but he never earned a cap for France. Absolutely scandalous.
Will he ever get one right?
That's why he played for Belgium, but he never actually played for Belgium.
Yeah, he's like, I think you could kind of class him as French as well, but he played for Fulham. I remember him mostly for.
One of them. As soon as I hear it, I'll probably remember. Only French. Mal Bronk, is it? Steve Mal Bronk?
Cozzy. He's got it.
Get in.
Get ball out of back of net, boards. Quick. Run back.
Get it back to the centre circle.
3-2, last penalty up. Cos Marla can seal it, though, and send you home.
You know, I'm going to proper jeopardy. I'm going to go hard, mate, and then could be a sensational late winner, mate. Could be Reece Ely all over again coming up.
Let's have a look.
I get it wrong. Drama here. Drama. And it didn't look like there were any. It's just so like yesterday.
I'm gonna get you a hard one. I'm gonna cheat a little bit.
Yeah,
it's cheating. Oh, fucking all these hard ones are easy. So you're going hard, did you say?
Yeah. Who scored the winning goal in the 1912 FA Cup? Oh, wow. Come on. Come on, Matt.
When you said we were doing a quiz, I thought it'd be a town quiz.
No.
Unfortunately not. Oh, shit. Hang on. Sorry. I've done that one. Right, okay. Nice, this is very short. This will do. This versatile Englishman scored the winning goal in Fulham's critical 2008 game against Portsmouth that secured the London club's survival in the Premier League. That's very, very short. Very, very...
Which one, mate? Say again.
This versatile Englishman scored the winning goal in Fulham's critical 2008 game against Portsmouth that secured the London club's survival in the Premier League.
Not like help there, is there? Jesus.
This is pretty hard, actually.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have got this in a million years.
God, Steve Davis, mate. No idea.
Incorrect. Pozza?
No, mate, sorry. No idea.
Bold is beautiful. It was Danny Murphy, everybody's favourite pundit.
Ooh, he won that side of
killer, score. This is Pozza's last penalty. What's the score?
Cos is leading 3-2 here, Poz. So are you gonna go for the win? Or are you gonna shit out a draw?
Yeah.
Come on. I'm gonna try shit out a draw, mate. Listen, I need to get a point on board.
Can you boo somebody on board?
I'm gonna turn off my cam in protest.
You gotta wait till you gotta wait till
turning off my cam in protest at this disgraceful tactics.
Okay.
Mate, sometimes you've just gotta get a point on board.
Both of these are quite easy, I think, in my opinion. So you can either go for the win or go for the draw.
Right, I'll tell you what, for viewers only, let's go for a win. Let's keep it exciting.
Yeah.
Oh,
I've been bullied into it, but let's go for it. Final throw of the dice.
I think this is easy. I genuinely do. This Turkish player played a total of 233 Premier League games for Blackburn, leaving him second on the list of most games played by a Turk in the competition.
Easy.
He never shied away from a hard tackle, which meant he was no stranger to the referee's book, earning 39 yellow. Shut up, Cozzy. 39 yellow and 5 red cards during his time in England's Premier League.
I think I know, Matt. Poz, come on.
I do.
Come on, Poz. Come on,
pause. I thought Pozzle looked very suspicious, of like he was typing then, and then a screen came up on his there was Poz, like
if,
a flash.
If Matt and Killer disappeared,
Poz,
if Matt and Killer disappeared now, what would we be left with?
Oh, don't give him any clues. Do you know who it is, Poz?
Go on, Poz.
5 seconds. No.
If Matt and Killer disappeared now, what would you be left with on the screen?
You don't know it.
Two guy.
Left.
It what? Is two guy. Yeah. Poz, two guy.
Hey.
Yep.
Go on, Poz.
That's it. That is Cozzy's first defeat.
When are we going to hold this bold man responsible?
Pause,
to be fair, without Cozzy's clue, I wouldn't have got that. It took a while to register. If we went two guys.
I'm starving.
You'll get
I think I'm going to buy that game.
This week, mate, everyone will be wanting your autograph. It's been chaos.
Right, okay, I think that's all we've got time for this week. A last-minute winner, and I think there's been a little bit of injury time on this podcast as well with a lot of... I'm shouting and talking as well, so I think that's all we've got time for, isn't it? Poz, good to see you back on up the town, man. And hopefully town are on the way.
You never know.
There's a team that is dear to its followers. The colours are bright blue and white. They're a team of renown. They're the pride of the town. And the game of football is their delight. And all the while upon the field of play, thousands loudly cheer them on the way. Often you can hear them say, who can beat the town today? And then the bells will ring so merrily, and every goal shall be a memory So town, play up and bring that car back to Huddersfield. So town, play up and bring the car back to Huddersfield.
Lads, what's your favourite 90th minute goal?
Got to be Heffley against Leeds. A shot from Moy and sliding in at the death, Michael Heffley. Great finish to the game. Shared with my family, only made better by ordering McDonald's via McDelivery afterwards. 3 points, McNugget share box, spot on. Order McDelivery now by the McDonald's app. You in.
At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.